this is your Polycast for Thursday, January 26th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, reaction to President Trump's latest actions on immigration, a compromise on health care, and fees could be going up. Later today, President Donald Trump is expected to sign an executive order restricting the flow of refugees into the U.S., including a temporary ban on those fleeing Muslim-majority countries. This comes after two orders yesterday, one to jumpstart construction of a wall on the Mexican border and another to block federal grants to what are called sanctuary cities. Dawali Zaikautau has more.
A draft of the executive order was sent to a number of media outlets yesterday, including NPR News, titled Protecting the Nation from Terrorist Attacks by Foreign Nationals. While the details could change, the 8-page document outlines stricter policies for refugees trying to enter the United States and places a month-long ban on those coming from countries with links to designated terrorist groups, including Somalia. That's causing great anxiety for some Minnesotans.
He's my dad, and I'll do whatever it takes to help him.
Ahmed Mohammed is 19 and lives in Minneapolis. He's ethnically Somali, born in Saudi Arabia and raised in South Africa. He says his father lives in Somalia and has failing kidneys.
Trump is going to be 4 years president. Who knows if my dad's going to be alive for 4 years? Anything can happen, but I really want to see him before 4 years.
Mohammed is a newly resettled refugee who arrived into the U.S. on his birthday in August of last year. He said it was the best birthday gift ever. But not all 11 of his siblings are here. One older sister is in Somalia and two others are in Saudi Arabia. The young man says he's confused by Trump's executive orders, saying he thought America welcomes foreigners, especially refugees.
You know what they say, you should help people who are in need. And I don't think he should do that and not ban from people from coming to USA, because what I heard that USA is a great place and it's a place where all nations love. You can't ban them from not coming here.
Trump campaigned on pledges to tighten U.S. immigration policies, including strengthening border security and stemming the flow of refugees. His call for a border wall was among his most popular proposals, with supporters who often broke out in chants of "build that wall" during rallies.
This is great.
At the state capitol, dozens of politicians, mostly Democrats and immigrant advocates, held an impromptu press conference shortly after Trump signed the two other executive orders on the wall with Mexico and funding cuts to sanctuary cities.
Muy buena tarde. Good afternoon, everyone. I will be remiss if I didn't acknowledge that this room is packed.
That's DFL State Representative Carlos Mariani of St. Paul.
What you have before you here is an incredible diversity. African, African-American, Latinos, Asians, Native Americans, Muslims, Christians, Jews. This is who we are. This is Minnesota. It is our nation, and this is who we are as Minnesota. We're not only...
Passionate speakers followed, echoing messages of support for immigrants and refugees. This is Reverend Jan Ellers Isaacs, senior co-minister of St. Paul's Unity Unitarian Church.
I speak here as one humble representative of the faith community in the state of Minnesota who want to stand and welcome all strangers. And as a religious leader, we will not stray from this moral imperative. We will welcome the holy strangers into our sanctuaries. We will care for their families, especially their children. And we will
When Minneapolis Mayor Betsy Hodges started to criticize Trump's order to block federal funding to sanctuary cities, the lights went out briefly.
I think he just turned off the lights. Donald Trump is doing his best to punish cities that have separation ordinances by threatening funding to cities. That is a big problem, and we will need to solve it. But it is a bigger problem if our democracy comes tumbling down around our ears, which is what it's in danger of doing if we give in to these kinds of threats. So we will stand strong.
The mayor said the city has worked too hard to make everyone feel safe calling the police, and she adds she's not about to let President Trump get in the middle of that. Dwahli Saikautau, Minnesota Public Radio News.
St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman is also reacting to the sanctuary city order. Kathy Werzer talked to him this morning.
Well, first of all, we absolutely do not violate federal law in any way, shape, or form. We collaborate and cooperate with federal law enforcement when appropriate to do so and when requested to do so. What the separation ordinance says is that when an officer is called to the scene of an assault or domestic abuse or any type of crime, the first question they ask is not what your immigration status is, but how are you and, you know, what happened and who did it. And our separation ordinance is really born out of best practices in law enforcement and simply that.
Can police turn over suspects who are in custody and are wanted by immigration authorities?
Well, if a suspect is in custody and has a hold for immigration, that partly is determined by the Ramsey County Sheriff after they've been booked into the jail in that process. But Ramsey County also would collaborate with custom officials. But this is about building trust relationships in a community that we need to desperately build relationships in. You think about in the Somali community right now how important police having good relationships with members of that community is right now. If the first question they ask of everyone that they talk to in the Somali community is, show me your papers, that's going to break down communication very quickly.
Is it a matter of semantics when you say separation versus sanctuary?
Well, you know, when I think of sanctuary city, I think of what St. Paul did in the 1920s when if you were John Dillinger, you could hang out in St. Paul and we would allow you to be here. But that is not at all what we do. I think the term sanctuary city is part of the whole attempt to demonize immigrant communities, demonize cities that are working very closely with their immigrant communities. And I think it's a real problem. You know, this is a president who started his campaign by demonizing Mexican immigrants. He has concocted 5 million allegedly fraudulent votes that were committed by immigrants. And I think it's important for us as cities to stand up and tell the truth about what's happening and truth about what our ordinances actually say.
If St. Paul is classified as a sanctuary jurisdiction, would you consider changing the city ordinance?
We will not because we're not in violation of even the executive order that the president issued. And if they are going to claim that we're violating federal law, which we are not, we would absolutely contest that in any way that we could.
If federal grants are cut off, do you have any idea of how that might affect St. Paul?
Well, again, under the wording of his own ordinance or his own executive order, it was if you're violating federal law, we would cut your funds off, and we're not doing that. So, if they were to attempt to do that, we would take whatever actions we could to prevent that.
Do you plan on seeking clarity on this issue or take kind of a wait-and-see approach to finding out what the Department of Homeland Security plans to do?
Well, obviously, the order was just issued yesterday afternoon. We are certainly looking at exactly the ins and outs of it and the impacts of it. But I think the clarity has to start off with the president and honestly have a conversation about the importance of immigration to this country. I find it puzzling that a person who grew up staring at the Statue of Liberty has chosen as his number one boogeyman in his presidency to be immigrants. St. Paul is a city of immigrants. My grandparents came from foreign lands for the same reasons that many people have come to St. Paul today, which is to be safe, to raise their family. You know, we need immigrants for the jobs in our community. This is a part of the history of who we are, and I think it's really unfortunate that people have forgotten that chapter of their own histories.
That's St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman speaking to our Kathy Werzer. At the state capitol, the House and Senate are expected to vote today on a compromise measure designed to provide health insurance relief to about 125,000 people who saw huge increases in their 2017 premiums. The bill also includes some changes aimed at slowing future premium increases. Tim Pugmire has more.
The revised legislation is a blend of the differing bills passed in the Republican-controlled House and Senate and Governor Dayton's requirements. It takes $327 million from the budget reserve to provide 25% premium discounts to Minnesotans who buy their health insurance on the individual market and who are not eligible for federal subsidies. The open enrollment period for those plans ends next Tuesday. Any money that isn't spent will go back to the reserve. Republican Senator Michelle Benson of Ham Lake says the deal will provide certainty to insurance buyers.
We have a lot of people who are sort of holding their breath trying to figure out if they can afford this. We hope this really sends the signal that if you're in the individual market, we're moving this as fast as we can to the governor's desk. I believe we have a bill he'll sign, and then relief can get started as soon as possible.
Under the deal, health plans will handle the discounts rather than the state. Dayton insisted on that approach to speed up the relief. The retroactive discounts will be included in premium invoices by April 30th. Republicans managed to get some of their longer-range reform measures in the bill, including one that allows for-profit insurers into the market. Another allows farmers to get insurance through agricultural cooperatives. There is also a continuity of care provision that helps people who've been forced to switch plans to continue seeing their old plan's doctor about serious health issues. Negotiators added $15 million to cover the expected costs from that temporary assistance. Republican Representative Joe Hoppe of Chaska said he was pleased with the compromise bill.
The reforms in their entirety might not add up to much, but what we want to do is position ourselves for whatever comes out of Washington, and we don't know what that's going to be. The biggest reform is going to be the for-profit HMOs. We might not have any that want to come here, but we wanted that in there just in case. I mean, now we're at some parts of our state where we only have one provider. We wanted to make sure that next year we don't have big parts of the state where we have zero providers.
Missing from the compromise is a Senate provision to cushion the financial impact on insurance companies from extra expensive payouts. Dayton insisted that lawmakers take a longer look at the reinsurance proposal, which is expected to be part of a second health insurance bill later in the session. The controversial House position to allow insurance companies to offer less expensive plans that cover fewer things, as long as full-blown plans remain available, was also stripped from the bill. Minnesota Management and Budget Commissioner Myron Franz said once the bill is passed and signed by the governor, his agency will start getting the word out.
The first thing we will be doing is a campaign to let people know about the rebate, right? We want everyone to sign up by January 31st and get an individual insurance if they qualify. So we'll be doing a lot of outreach on that. The next thing we'll be doing is putting together the procedures and forms so that the health plans know how quickly and how to go about adopting this.
Governor Dayton sent a letter this week to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services under the new Trump administration. He requested an extension of the state's open enrollment deadline to February 28th. A previous request was denied by the outgoing Obama administration. Covering politics, I'm Tim Pugmire at the Capitol.
Governor Mark Dayton's budget plan totals nearly $46 billion and spans hundreds of pages. The big-ticket items will no doubt spark fights between the DFL governor and Republican-controlled legislature from now until May. But there are many proposals in those pages that would hit home when Minnesotans renew a driver's license, go to a state park, or just turn on the faucet. Brian Bax took a closer look.
Expect to hear a lot in coming months about Governor Dayton's plan to increase school spending by 2% a year and to offset family costs for pre-kindergarten programs. Same goes for his proposal to expand MinnesotaCare and his request for $60 million in new broadband development grants. But other parts of his budget have a more direct line to your pocketbook and might not get as much attention. Minnesota Management and Budget Commissioner Myron Franz says the often overshadowed items are critical in everything from fighting crime to monitoring public health threats.
Each part of this budget plays an important role in ensuring that we deliver services to Minnesotans.
But those services cost money. Under Dayton's recommendations, it would cost people a buck more to renew a driver's license, with the extra money going toward operating a new registration system for licenses and motor vehicle titles. The state's drinking water protection program will receive more money to guard against contaminants and provide emergency response when problems are detected. To do that, the connection fee on 1.26 million households, institutions, and businesses would rise in January. It amounts to 22 cents more per month for each household. Tattoo parlors and piercing studios would be inspected with more regularity. But the cost of body art licenses would double, or in some cases triple. Other occupational licenses would also go up to cover the higher costs of criminal background checks. License fees could go down for electricians, plumbers, and other contractors, a $2.6 million annual cost break. Some of the widest-reaching fee increases would fall on outdoors enthusiasts. The Department of Natural Resources is seeking $40 million in extra fees on ATVs, boats, snowmobiles, ski trail passes, state park entrances, and more. Anglers would pay $25 for their annual resident license, a $3 increase. Or as DNR Commissioner Tom Landwehr put it,
if you're buying emerald shiners and budette, that is about a quarter of a scoop of minnows.
Deer hunters would be asked to pony up $4 more, or $34 in all for a resident license.
About the cost of four 30-06 bullets.
Landwehr knows he has his work cut out for him.
One of the challenges with fees is that it is always a tough ask at the Capitol because nobody wants to raise fees, nobody wants to raise taxes, and yet that is the source of income for these programs.
Republican Senator Bill Ingebretson of Alexandria is chairman of the Senate committee that oversees natural resources finances. He's reviewing the fee recommendations and at first blush thinks they're reasonable. But he's waiting to hear whether the public and his colleagues see it that way.
The big message is, and they need to understand that these dollars are dedicated. They're not used for anything else but game and fish. And that's the good part. That's the good part because we have a tremendous fisheries, tremendous hunting opportunities. We just have a tremendous resource, and we have to take care of it. We have to enforce the laws, and part of those dollars go towards that.
DFL Representative Rick Hansen of South St. Paul says it's a pay-now-or-pay-later choice because it could cost more to rescue parks and habitat if they're neglected. But he says backers must show people are getting their money's worth out of the fee hikes.
If they just go into the machine and people don't see a result, like the staffing, the improvements in the facilities, the improvements in the hunting and fishing experience, then I think Minnesotans become skeptical.
Not everyone would pay more to hunt or fish. More disabled military veterans would qualify for free licenses. Now anyone with 100% service-connected disability gets a license for free. Dayton recommends dropping the threshold to 50%, making 16,000 more veterans eligible. Covering politics, I'm Brian Baxt at the Capitol.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.